This is Game Time AM. Now, back to Brad Lee and Jeff Jones from St. Louis Game Time on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.
Good morning, St. Louis. How's it going? We got a little Jeremy Boyer organ music coming back from break. Here on Game Time AM, I'm Brad. That's Jeff over there wearing his Washington Capitals hoodie. I'm going to ask you how you got that here in 1 second. Matt Davis pushing the buttons, playing the organ music. Now, I remember you got some flack from one Jimmy the Cat Hayes wearing that hoodie.
I did.
During the playoffs when the Blues were still alive and the Capitals were still alive. And I think the Cat basically said, why are you repping a team from the East when the Blues are still playing? What are you doing, right?
I have my diversity of interests here.
But there's a story behind this piece of clothing, right?
There is, yeah.
Right, tell me.
I got a little bit of incidental damage in the locker room.
Did you say it caught fire?
Yeah, there was a stick being torched.
Uh-huh.
And I got a sleeve of my shirt that got a little bit of fire on it. And so they had an old hoodie laying around that they chucked my direction. So
your shirt got fire on it.
I was standing too close to somebody who was messing with one of their sticks, and they had the blowtorch out. I backed into it a little bit. It was kind of my fault.
You sure there's not more to that story?
No, that's pretty much it. Here's the thing. This is like the Cat's Jordan Walden underwear story, where I feel like if I talk about it too much, it's going to be talked about for forever. And so it's like,
yeah. Matt, when was the last time you had a piece of clothing you had to replace because it got too much fire on it?
It's been a while.
Yeah, I don't.
It has happened. It has happened, but it's been a while.
Yeah,
bonfire season, maybe.
Yes, exactly.
Exactly.
Bonfire season. I used to do some crazy stuff, but yeah, that's probably a good 10-12 years.
Yeah.
By the way, a text from King V says liberals hashtag triggered. So I don't know if we're the liberals or if he's like making fun of that.
He's making fun of you.
Well, that's
I can guarantee it.
I guess.
All right, so thanks for coming back for the second segment, the second hour of Game Time AM. If you missed the first hour, it'll be up on Inside SCL shortly. We talked about the conference finals, the Ducks and the Predators, the Senators and the Penguins. That game two of that series is tonight, I believe, on NBC Sports Network.
Yes.
7 p.m.-ish here in St. Louis, or 6? 7.
I think it's going to be 6:30.
6:30. There you go. So there were a couple of things with the Cardinals, actually. I intended to get to, and then we didn't. We actually started talking about the FBI investigation.
Well, you get to the Cardinals while I refresh Reddit to see what's going on in the Stern Show.
Okay. There's drama with the Howard Stern Show. Oh, well. All right. So yesterday, after the Cardinals won the series, there was an interesting tweet from the Cardinals from their official Twitter account, and it was they're basically trolling the Cubs, which I think is amazing. So basically, leading up to that series, Joe Maddon, the manager of your Chicago Cubs, was kind of complaining, whining, saying that his players were tired, that they'd lost some sleep. You know, they had the long extra inning game last Sunday night against the Yankees, and then they had to travel, and they got in late, and you know, it was a long off season. It was not a long off season because you know they won the World Series, and
right,
and you know they're still lacking sleep dating back to early November, and you know, he's complaining about it. So the Cardinals decided to make fun of the Blues, or to make fun of the Cubs a little bit. So their post-game tweet yesterday showed the Cardinals rounding the bases on a home run. And their tweet yesterday, 13 hours ago, says, thankfully tomorrow's an off day. This means we'll get plenty of rest after winning the series. And then they used a sleeping face emoji with like little Z's floating over it. He says, see you Tuesday. Man, directly making fun of the manager of the Chicago Cubs. I don't think you usually see the official Twitter account for a professional sports team making fun of a manager of the rival team. I'm all for it, though.
I think you're going to see more and more of that. I think that the official Twitter accounts are now getting more engaged in what the kids
more personality.
Call, yeah, the clapback.
The clapback.
Isn't that a thing?
I
a snapback is a habit. I think the clapback is like when you answer somebody's like
Matt Davis looks confused. What's a clapback?
No, that's like you know, somebody says something and you like shoot him back on the Twitter tweets, right? Like you got your own little like a sharp jab in return. Okay. I think that's a clapback.
Clapback. What makes it a clapback?
I don't know. Cause, well, I think somehow like the clapping hands emoji is involved, right? Like you say something and it's like, oh.
I've seen that. I've seen that. Right.
This all really doesn't make much sense at all for somebody that doesn't emoji.
Yeah, but you're both old.
Terminology.
What? Actually, are you older than me?
I am older than you.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
By not
you're
much.
Both old. Yeah,
I'm 31.
Yeah.
By not much.
That's fine. I'm young and hip. That's fine.
Oh, man.
That was a nice reaction, Matt Davis. Thank you. So there was another thing on Twitter yesterday. There's a certain writer with the Post-Dispatch, Jesus Ortiz, and I guess it did not look like he actually had a conversation. I think he just saw that. So reporters were talking to Magnieris. I'm just not
well.
Going to
okay. Well, and this is the center of the thing because it also might be Magnieri or Magnieri. It's a Hispanic name that does not have an easy English equivalent. And it's not a very common name.
No.
And so
M. Sierra.
Yes.
Young phenom with the Cardinals, who may not be with the Cardinals much longer, and I'd like to talk about that as well. But first, apparently, the reporters were asking him if he had a nickname.
And
he doesn't. Isn't that conversation?
So rewind, because not exactly. What happened is, apparently, and this was on, I believe, May 9th, I saw this post on the TMA fan page, the Cat had tweeted, confirmation that his teammates call him Mags. The teammates call him Mags in the locker room. So yesterday, I think in response to Twitter more than anything else, Jesus, and I will pause here for the disclaimer that says, whatever your opinion of him might be, he has personally been very nice to both you and I. I'm not a big fan of his work, but he has been personally very nice and very accommodating to the paper, so we should say that. He has been a friend of Game Time. But tweeted basically that Roberto Clemente, when he was playing in Pittsburgh in the 50s and 60s, fought to be called Roberto and not Bob, because at that point, Roberto was a relatively exotic name for a Major League Baseball player. And so in print and among the media, people called him Bob. And he said, that's not my name. My name is Roberto. And it was a whole thing. And so his argument was that Clemente had fought these battles 50 years ago, we should not have to relitigate them with Magnieris Sierra, that we should call him his name. If he wants to be called Magnieris, then call him Magnieris.
That's a little bit of an overreaction,
right?
Which is
fine, yes. And so I think that there are a couple of big distinctions here. Number one, if what the Cat tweeted is to be believed, and I have no reason why it wouldn't be believed, then his teammates call him Mags in the room, right? Which is fine. Right. And number two, I think there's a difference between nicknaming a name and anglicizing a name, right? And so when you go from Roberto to Bob, it's so white people can have an easier time saying the name. Going from Magnieris to Mags is like a shortening of a nickname, right? That's a very different thing to me.
But also for a reason of making it easier to say.
Well, no, yeah, I mean, yes. No, but when I say so white people can say it, what I mean is so that, like, the dominant cultural forces, especially in the media, can make it more relatable or easier to understand.
So
that was glib, but yeah.
So if people give Vladimir Tarasenko a nickname, and it's, you know, a lot of people call him Vladdy.
Well, and so that actually is an interesting comparison because he went through that when he came over. Because if you remember this, when he came over,
they started calling him Tank,
and he didn't necessarily like it, right?
He said, don't call me Tank.
Right. He said, don't call me Tank. And so I think it was Kachuk, maybe. Actually, it might have been TJ Oshie. Sort of calling him Frank. Instead,
Frank the Tank.
Which,
from old school.
Right, which I thought was funny, and every once in a while I'll still call him Frank. But, I mean, he doesn't, like, his name is Vladimir. He answers to Vladdy, and I guess his nickname has been Vova for a long time. That's a Russian thing. Okay, fine. That's his right. He's a grown man. He can be called what he wants to be called. So there is a degree, I think, of creating Westernized or anglicized nicknames for people. I mean, Sierra is Dominican, though. That's a Western nation, but it's not, you know, like, it's not a first world developed Western nation, I guess, right? Obviously, the culture is very different. So if he doesn't want to be called Mags, then that's fine. I didn't see any evidence that he doesn't want to be called Mags. So I think it's This one to me felt like a case, and here we'll balance out my liberal snowflake stuff from the first hour by saying that this one felt like a case of being offended on someone's behalf for no reason.
Yeah, I tempest in a teapot.
Yeah.
So
I mean, yeah, at this point we're probably popping the lid off the teapot a little too much, I guess. But yeah. the point of the story, I guess, is call people what they want to be called.
So I think the real story involved with Mr. Sierra. Can I just call him Mr. Sierra?
That's fine.
The real story with Sierra is, where is he going to be playing in the very near future? Because Stephen Piscotty is going to be available relatively soon. I think maybe sometime even this week, right?
I think the expectation was that he could be activated as soon as tomorrow.
So, yeah. So they're going to have to make a roster decision on who to keep. And they actually have too many outfielders and too many outfielders playing well.
They also have too many relief pitchers is the bigger issue.
I know, but, you know.
Here's the thing.
If Mike Matheny, leader of men, is going to go with 13 relief pitchers, then you're going to have to make a decision in
but
the outfield.
He should not. This is a spot where Mozeliak needs to draw the line in the sand and say enough with the 13 pitchers, because
but would you want Sierra to ride the bench if he can't play every day?
Well, and I think that John Mozeliak spoke to that a little bit yesterday before the game. I saw him interviewed and they asked him basically that question, which was, you know, and I think also for Saturday as well, Sierra was on the bench. If Fowler's going to be healthy, there's not really a starting spot for Sierra. He got the start yesterday because Fowler had a little, I guess, residual soreness in the shoulder. And I think that as long as Dexter does have that little bit of residual soreness in the shoulder, then you will see them make a reason for Sierra to stay with the club, right? Like, you can start Grichuk in center, and it's fine. You could go Pham, Grichuk, Piscotty across the outfield, and you'd be fine. But I think that given how well that Sierra has played, they're going to create excuses to keep him on the roster.
The fact that Tommy Pham has worked himself into this conversation and has basically positioned himself where you say he needs to have a starting role is pretty shocking to me. And Saturday, I mean, he was, what, 2-for-3? Two RBIs, 2 runs scored. He stole a base. I mean, he's just creating havoc when he's out there right now. I don't think... The fact that he is in this conversation is surprising, because I think for the last couple months I've been saying he's a 4A player. He's not quite AAA, but he's not quite Major League Baseball quality. And he's really stepped up his game and become an important guy on this team right now.
So here's the thing.
Yeah?
Miguel,
what's the thing?
Miguel Sokolovich has not appeared in a game in a week. His last game was May 8th in Miami, where he pitched 3 innings and got the 3 inning save. His ERA this season is 6.75. Like, he's given up something like 11 runs in 14 innings or something. He's 30. He's a guy who's likely to get through waivers when you have to cut somebody. I'm sorry, like, if we're gonna keep the Broxton thing going, if the Broxton train is still on the tracks for now, and it appears to be, then you gotta let Sokolovich go. I mean, that's it, right? You have to go from 13 back to 12 pitchers, and that is the way that you activate Piscotty.
Yeah, but I still say, you know, so Sierra's what, 21?
Yeah.
He hasn't played above high A.
Right. Look,
he needs more seasoning.
And I don't disagree with that, and there will be other opportunities. Basically, Johnny Peralta is the opportunity that would allow you to send Sierra back down. And when you watch Sierra, like, he's getting on base, he's got this hitting streak, he's not mash in the ball, right? Like, no. When he's making contact, it's a lot of, excuse me, bloops kind of over the end. Like, it's a lot of in-between little cue shots behind the infielders, but in front of the outfielders that are getting them on base.
I don't think anyone has said the Cardinals need their own version of Billy Hamilton.
Right.
But it would be nice if they had their own version of Billy Hamilton.
Well, I think I heard Gould last week making that comparison, and it's an apt one. But it's the same deal with Hamilton, where it was like, his defense and his speed are going to be at the level that they're at. How much better is the bat going to get? I mean, there's not going to probably ever be a whole lot of power. I think they still hope that Sierra could be a 10, 12, 15 home run guy. But you look at him, and he doesn't have the body type of a guy that you expect to punch the ball out of the yard very often.
If you could get him to hit in the gaps and see how many of those doubles he could turn into triples, I mean, he could be like this generation's Willie McGee kind of guy.
So, by the way, text from the 314 says Tui's on the roster. He'll go down before Sokolovich. That's the path of less resistance. You can option out Tui Vilala. I don't think that that's a great use of the roster. Now, granted, I understand that you don't want to burn an asset if you don't have to, but Sokolovich is not pitching, and Tui's been very good when he's been in games this year.
Can I just mention that I'm jealous that you can just roll that name off the tongue?
What, Tuivalala?
Yeah, and not have any, like, second...
Tuivalala and Sokolovich?
Yeah.
And Magnieris?
And you're like, yeah, I'm just going to roll with these, and I'm like, man, I don't want to say that guy's name because I don't want to say it wrong.
As long as...
I haven't had to say Alex Pietrangelo for a while now.
And you nailed it. See, that one's just in your head. If you just burn through it, it's going to be fine. Yeah, I don't know. It's phonetic, right? Like most Samoan stuff is very phonetic. You just have to understand the way that the vowel sounds go.
I'm still not going to say it.
That's fair. I mean, the text is not wrong that in terms of roster management, the path of less resistance is just to option out Tui and maintain what you have. But I don't know. Sokolovich has been good in the past when he's been there. He has not been good so far this season, and he's not pitching, right? And then, you know, this was, I think a week ago I saw Gould write about this as well, as Matheny talks about how much more comfortable he feels with having the last guy at the end of the roster, but they don't use that guy. Like, he doesn't get any use at all. And, by the way, we should keep in mind that eventually they're going to have to get rid of both Sokolovich and Tuivalala, because when Tyler Lyons is healthy, he has to have a spot on the roster as well, because Lyons is out of options. And so you have to, so that's going to, that would be Tuivalala's spot. And you would lose Sokolovich eventually anyway. And I think also, by the way, there is probably a degree of, I guess we'll call it professional courtesy, right? To a guy like Sokolovich, who is a veteran, where he's maybe more likely to catch on with another team earlier in the season. And so if you're going to have to let him go eventually, I would imagine that the Cardinals, as a sort of organizational principle, would rather let a guy like that go in May than at the end of June, because it gives him more opportunity to find more work.
It seems like on this show, we obsess over the bottom of the roster decisions, like that last spot on the third line for the Blues, and we're talking about the 13th reliever, and Tyler Lyons needs a spot on the roster. Hey, Tyler Lyons, really?
He's good. He's been very good.
Okay. He's kind of the Tommy Pham of the pitching staff. He's too good to be in AAA, but has struggled to find a role on the major league roster.
He has one pitch that in the major leagues is murderously good. Like, that slide piece for a left-hander is fantastic. And for a left-hander, that's a career. If you have one good pitch
He wanted to be a starter, though.
Right. He did want to be a starter, and he still, I think, is stretched out. And I think, you know, at this point, who knows with the injuries, but I think optimally the Cardinals would like to have him available, because you're not gonna only use five starters all season. In fact, you're probably coming up on a stretch here. I think the Cardinals have like one off day in the next 28 or something after this week. You're coming up on a stretch where you're probably going to need one of those starters in that gap, right?
And they have 2 days off this week. They have today off, then they have Red Sox Thursday.
But after that, it's like a solid month of not having any days off.
And there's a little bit of travel. They go, they have next Monday off, and then they go out to the West Coast, Dodgers, then Rockies, then they come back for Dodgers again. There's a
Cubs series the first weekend of June up at Wrigley.
The schedule gets a little bit harder and a little more intense for sure. You're listening to Game Time AM here on 590 The Fan, KFNS, 105.7 HD2, streaming live on InsideSTL.com. Hey, Matt, do we have the podcast up yet from the first hour?
No, I was having issues. I'm working on it right now. It's currently about to upload.
The internets are still, I think, a little...
Yeah, we're working on it. So if you missed us talking a lot of hockey and FBI investigation, check out the first hour if you're just waking up. The sun is coming up. I can clearly see the building across the street now.
Look,
is a good sign.
When I was driving here, when I got off at the Mugi Road exit at 4:45, it was starting to lighten.
You could see the sun coming up over the horizon.
Yeah, it was coming.
I was actually freaking out a little bit, because I was like, it's 4:45. The sun shouldn't be coming up already.
You're looking at your
clock.
You're looking at your phone an hour late. Yeah.
Well, and I got here first to the station. Everything was dark, and I actually said to myself, it is Monday, right? I'm not here like on Sunday morning on accident.
I think I say that every day. Be like, wait, what day is it?
This is why, I just have the automatic alarm set on the phone. It just goes at the right time and the right days, and I don't even never have to think about it.
Yeah, I do that. So we normally talk hockey here, not a lot with the Blues. There was a story in the Post-Dispatch and on STL Today from our friend Jeremy Rutherford talking about, the headline says, roster upheaval is unlikely for the Blues. It was posted 7 hours ago, and He kind of lays it out a little bit, saying, you know what, there's only one unrestricted free agent for the Blues this offseason, Scotty Upshaw, and there's just a couple of restricted free agents. And so he actually talked to Scotty Upshaw, Jeremy Rutherford did, and so he said, you know, 33-year-old fourth line forward, 10 goals, 18 points in 73 games. Have you talked to the Blues about a new contract? He said, it hasn't really been discussed. I was looking forward to having a conversation with Army and the coaching staff. I still feel like I can play. I look forward to another good summer of training, getting better, putting myself in a good spot for free agency. So I think he's pretty much resigned himself that he's not going to be back. And he may have soured on the roster, on the organization a little bit when he was not in every lineup coming down the stretch.
I don't know that necessarily he's... I mean, I know that like his brother was a little cranky on social media or whatever. I don't know that necessarily he soured so much as he just kind of saw the writing on the wall.
If you haven't talked... Like, right.
Did season, he really be soured, though?
I mean, they're right. There's not.
Did he ever have regular playing time before he came to St. Louis?
No, before he came to St. Louis, I mean, like there was a point in his career where Scotty Upshaw was like a
20-goal scorer.
Yeah, and a top, like a top-ranked prospect.
Right, but when he came into St. Louis, he was pretty much...
No, yeah, he's a journeyman kind of guy. Right, yeah.
End of the line.
But, I mean, there's a difference between playing 12 minutes a night and not playing at all, right? And so that, you know, when you slide down to that, like, healthy scratch part of the universe, then it's a different situation, and it's a new... That's a new spot in the career for a lot of guys.
Does he really bring enough for us to discuss, you know, whether we should, how we should feel about him coming back or not coming back?
Well, and so as you talk about...
It opens a roster spot.
You talk about the end of the roster and the conversation about the last guys on the roster. I mean, I think the reason that exists is because that's where the conversation is, right? Like, there's no conversation with the top end of the roster.
Are they going to bring back Paul Stastny?
That's going to happen because of the, on a 20-man roster in the NHL or 25-man roster in baseball, 22 of those spots in baseball and 18 of those spots in the NHL are sewn up, right? So the only conversation to have is about the bottom of the roster.
Well, there's got to be some conversation.
Right.
Well, I mean, I guess it would have to be speculation or whatever with the top of the lineup because, I mean, as of now, otherwise you're going in with, you know, Sobotka, Berglund, or, you know, Laterra maybe even in your top six. So,
well, I mean,
there's room for some kind of discussion there.
But as we should remember, number one, Robbie Fabry coming back next season is in that conversation. And number two,
not as a center though, right?
No, but from Doug Armstrong's mouth is, you know, Sobotka is a guy who can play on our top six. I mean, that's the thing that he's
said. When he left, he was a bottom roster guy, now he's top six.
Sure, but look, you're looking at Stastny, Schwartz, Tarasenko for that top line, so, and that second line, you're looking at some combination of Fabry, Steen, Berglund,
so just taking
Barbashev. I mean, those are the guys that are in that conversation.
Taking this crazy stab at things, if they are somehow able to upgrade center and either add a number one or a guy to come in number two, then we're talking about if Sobotka cracks the top six, and we're talking left wing, basically him and Fabry having it out for left wing.
Yeah, I think
on one of those.
I think if they were to add a top six center, then you'd be looking more like Sobotka being kind of that jack of all trades, up and down the lineup kind of situation where he would, you know, where basically he takes the defensive zone shifts late in the game for Robbie Fabry, right? That's the kind of spot you'd be looking at. I did think it was interesting. Jeremy had a chat on Friday. I don't know if you're looking at that right now, but he had a chat on Friday and was asked the requisite, who are you protecting? And came up with almost the exact same list that you and I came up with on the air last week, except that he protected Ryan Reeves and exposed David Perron, which I think is...
I'm blown away at that. I don't
love it.
Seems like a lot of people do.
Jeremy's argument was that Reeves, when he's playing well, jump starts the forecheck in a way that it is hard to find other. And I see Matt
at 1.7 million.
How are we going to act like Ryan Reeves isn't replaceable? I mean, come on.
I don't disagree
with
you.
So many people, all these lists I've been reading from so many people all over the place, Ryan Reeves is a protected player. Come on.
The thing with the chat and the thing with Jeremy sometimes, I think, is that you have to learn to parse out what is his opinion and what is organizational opinion.
Right.
My read of, and I'd have to pull it up to verify this, but my read of that answer was that he was guessing at organizational opinion and not necessarily at his own. So my suspicion is
that
Ryan Reeves has enough fans in the front office that Jeremy is getting the sense that that would be what would occur.
And the amount of frustration the front office had to have and coaching staff had to have in
with
David Perron's playoff performance.
Yeah, I am totally sure that the off-the-record conversations about David Perron have not been real complimentary over the last month or so.
I'm okay with exposing Perron. I really am. But if it's to protect Ryan Reeves...
And that's my thing, too, is if you...
Do we really only have six people on this roster worth protecting? Six forwards on this roster worth protecting?
Well, and so the other part of this conversation that I thought was interesting is that Jeremy suggested that Vegas could end up being a clearinghouse for a lot of trades, which is fair, right? Like, if you have teams that potentially have open protection spots, right? If they don't have seven guys that are really easy to protect, if they're not obligated to protect a lot of guys, then you might see a situation where teams are pressured into trades in order to make sure they don't get nothing for a player. So, for example, Anaheim is a team that is drowning in no-move clauses and guys that they're going to have to protect. And they are going to have to expose probably a very good defenseman and a forward. Like a guy like Jakob Silfverberg, for example, is likely to be exposed in this expansion draft. So if you're Anaheim, wouldn't you rather try to trade Silfverberg to a team where you would get a return for him who can then protect him than just lose him for free?
That's true. And then if you could trade for a guy who doesn't have to be protected, who's exempt.
Right.
Then that solves that issue.
Exactly.
So,
or even for draft picks, right?
Uh-oh. What's going on, Matt Davis?
I'm just reading texts to people defending David Perron because he only had two bad weeks of hockey.
Matt, what do you want to read there from the text inbox? It's from 855-282-8255.
It's from Lexington Steel. It says, good Lord, Perron has two bad weeks. People forget that he has a very good contract for 1 year. Here's the thing. It's not just that he had two bad weeks.
His career playoff numbers
are
stink.
Very bad. It wasn't just bad weeks either. It's not like he was being kept off the score sheet but was generating offense. Otherwise, he was absolutely useless. I mean, just vanished.
And look,
I agree. David Perron had like a 48-point season this year. That's a useful player at $3.5 million for 1 year for a second or third line.
The majority of his goals came in the first 2 months of the season.
That is also a reasonable point.
He had, I think, 11 or 12 goals in the first 2 months, and then he finished with still less than 20.
He finished with fewer than 20 and had a hat trick this season, right? So that at least is a substantial portion of the goal scoring in one game.
So yeah, he was getting points periodically throughout the season, but he wasn't really playing good hockey, in my opinion.
Let me mention the numbers.
He was adequate at best.
David Perron in the playoffs, 11 games played. Zero goals, one assist, minus one, 8 penalty minutes, took only 17 shots in 11 games. Career playoffs, 42 career playoff games, 3 goals, 11 assists, 14 points in 42 games.
Yeah.
He has 85 shots in 42 career playoff games. For his career, he has played 652 regular season games, 378 points. I think people expected at age 28. I think people expected more from him from his career. I mean, he was a first round pick.
I think that's fair. I think you more or less had to expect more from him.
The regular season that we got from David Perron was fine. It would have been better if it would have been spaced out a little more. It was perfectly adequate, and it was what you wanted from it.
He played 82 games. Second time his career he's played 82 games in a season.
Was it unfair to expect 20 goals from him?
Well, he had 18, finished with 18, 28 assists, 46 points. I think a successful season, obviously.
Okay.
And a season that they needed. His shooting percentage was a little high, 11.9. Last year in Anaheim, so he played in Pittsburgh for 43 games, 28 in Anaheim the regular season, had a 15% shooting percentage, only 4% shooting percentage in Pittsburgh before the trade. So I think you could say he's been unlucky a couple times in his career, but I mean,
what was the unlucky
thing?
Part?
The thing with David Perron
playing on a team with Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin.
You only shoot
4.2%. Yeah,
That's horrible.
There will still be people in St. Louis even now, 10 years later, who will see Perron as the first round pick and the kid with the white skates with all the pucks. Like there are expectations of Perron that do not match up to the realities of the player. He is a guy with a high level of skill without the ability to create for himself and without necessarily the kind of big game chutzpah that you need, maybe.
This is a callback to the early days of either of this show or when I was a guest on another show that was in this time slot. There was a time in the St. Louis Blues not long ago where they could not wait to get young prospects into the NHL roster because the cupboard was so bare at the professional, at the top level, at the Blues roster. The Blues lineup was so bare. So you had guys like TJ Oshie did not play one game of AHL experience. Patrick Berglund never played in the AHL. David Perron, because of when he was drafted, so he was it was his second time through. The first time he was eligible to be drafted, he was not drafted. So they draft him the second time through. He's 19. He comes in and looks pretty good at training camp. They give him the tryout.
By the way, we should point out here, we should pause to point out that it is exceedingly rare for a player to not be drafted at all on his first draft eligible year, and then the second draft eligible year first round pick.
Yeah.
That is super rare because that means that there was either such a massive leap in development or there were scout concerns that maybe this is a guy with skill but not much else going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So he goes from not drafted to drafted in the first round and then goes from playing for the Maniacs, right, in the Ontario Hockey League, I believe.
That's the Q.
Okay, yes. So the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League. The QMJHL. Goes from there to a pretty good training camp with the White Skates, like you mentioned. Andy Murray's the head coach. They give him the tryout where basically you can play up to 10 games and not burn a year on your entry-level contract. And they decide to keep him. But it was that situation where he'd play a game and then sit two games. And then he'd play two games and sit three. And there was that uneven usage, and then he just stuck around and never played a minute of minor league professional hockey. And, you know, I kind of question the effect that had on some players long term when they were handed starting jobs in the NHL and not earning jobs in the NHL.
So here's the thing. I don't necessarily agree with that handed versus earning sort of situation because – say what you will about the team's depth at the time. I don't think that they were handing out jobs for free. It's, you know, look, they had veteran players in. That was the era of Marty Rutschinski and Bill Guerin and all those sort of, you know, all those sorts of.
Mike Sillinger's not walking through that door.
Mike Sillinger walked out the door, brought back Timofey Tishkinov. But I look.
You don't think they handed jobs to those guys?
Berglund spent 2 years playing in Sweden after he was drafted. It wasn't like he was drafted and got stuck into the lineup. TJ Oshie played 2 or 3 years in North Dakota after he was drafted.
He played 3 years total.
That's kind of a lot. Like for a first round pick to go 3 years after their draft year before they appear in the NHL, that is longer. Like NHL players increasingly now are making the jump directly after their draft year or 1 year later. Look, we're talking about Tage Thompson, maybe making the team next year after 1 year of college and 20 games in Chicago.
But he's at least played some time in Chicago, right?
But no, I mean, he played part of a season there. And actually, I'm fairly sure that Oshie played a chunk, like played a
nope.
Play, he didn't play one game
nope.
in Peoria.
Nope.
Okay.
Nope. And we should mention the season is over for the Chicago Wolves.
Yes.
They were eliminated Saturday night by Charlotte.
Yeah.
The Checkers?
No, sorry. Grand Rapids.
They beat Charlotte. Yeah. That was the first round. So second round, Grand Rapids Griffins eliminated them on Saturday night. Kind of disappointing. They'd gotten some guys back from the Blues, and they had a little bit more robust roster.
Ville Husso saved it up a little bit.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, they gave up 5 goals in damn near every playoff game. I mean, they had a hard time keeping the puck out of the net.
He's, 22, just came over from Finland over the summer. I kind of wonder if he might be a trade chip that could be used at some point in the near future.
I mean, but everybody's got that guy. That's the
you think?
What value? What, yeah, everybody's got a goalie.
He's a legit prospect.
Everybody has a goalie in their system that they think is a legit prospect, right? There's not a lot of value for prospect goalies until they show you something irrefutable. Matt Murray, 18 months ago, was on no one's radar as a conversation, as a legit prospect, and now he's a starting goaltender in the NHL.
Okay, that's fair.
I mean, everybody's got a guy that they think can do it, and until they call him up and he does do it, then it's hard for prospect goalies to have a whole lot of value. Text from the 314 asking whatever happened to Phil McRae. Last I saw Phil McRae, I think he was playing in like Switzerland or something. I don't know. I think wasn't he in camp this past year on a tryout contract? I think he was.
I think so.
Yeah, I mean, that's a guy who just wasn't ever very fast or good. I mean, I don't know. Like I was, that was an example of that period where they were picking up guys from St. Louis for basically no reason, who didn't have a whole lot of skill. And Phil McRae was a pretty big reach. Like my recollection of that draft was a lot of guys being like, really? You probably could have gotten Phil McRae at 70. Why'd you take him at 35?
Yeah, that's a good question. Hey, we need to get to one of our regular segments here on Game Time AM. I know you have this ready, the Bad Blues Lounge post of the day.
You will never find a more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
So on Facebook, if you're a Blues fan, you probably are a member of the Blues Lounge. We are not, because we've been banned. So we make fun of the insane people who post there and are spies. Steve, thanks for sending us your dump. Appreciate it. He sent me 41 pages of Blues Lounge posts to sort through this morning. So I didn't have to go very far. It's the off season, and what is the funniest thing to read online for Blues fans? The fake like trade or free agent signing that would just fix the Blues, yes. That is totally unrealistic. So our friend Gary W, says, okay, so here is the guy I think is the answer to our first line center issue. He's an RFA and will cost us a pick.
Here, okay, well,
but it'll be worth it.
Because I might have tweeted about the same guy this weekend.
Yeah?
Before you say the name.
Who did you tweet about?
Is it Kuznetsov?
It is?
Yeah.
All right, yeah. We need to get rid of Laterra or J-Bo to do it, though. That player is Evgeny Kuznetsov, 24 years old, over 60% on the faceoff dot in his career, and he played with 91 Vladimir Tarasenko in the Olympics.
I would love to have Kuznetsov in this, like that.
Yeah, but
and they're also, by the way, like that would be a best case scenario, because you replace like Vladdy's good buddy with his better buddy, right? They're very close.
Sure. Okay. So here's the thinking, because Washington is already up against the cap, and they may want to try to bring back TJ Oshie. They've got other positions, and
if you
want
to bring back
other big contracts,
I'm going to pause right here to say that if you bring back Oshie at the expense of Kuznetsov, then you should be fired.
Yeah, probably. So they have some issues. So if you sign him to a big enough contract, you could really tie the hands of the Washington Capitals.
You could, in theory, price them out on Kuznetsov for sure.
How are you going to clear salary cap room, Jeff Jones?
If you're
Doug Armstrong, how do you fit him under the cap? How do you create that room?
And that's the struggle. And this is that's where the
struggle's real,
right? Because honestly, like I love that idea. Like I love so much the thought of getting Kuznetsov here to play with Tarasenko, because that is an extraordinarily valuable player. Like he was a 70-point center 2 years ago. He only had 55 this past year, but got off to a slow start. That is a guy who would play on the first line here immediately and have a huge impact. Now, in order to sign him to a deal that the Capitals wouldn't be able to match, you're probably talking about like $7.5 million or so, and so you're talking about giving
at least
you're talking about giving up like a first, a second, and a third or something, right? So you're dumping the draft basically to sign Kuznetsov. Now, I wouldn't hate that. He's on the list of guys that I think that might be worth that kind of a deal.
If Ron Curran were the general manager, I'd say, yeah, there's a good chance they'd try it.
The number would be a really hard one to fit. You would have to find someone to swallow all of Laterra, and you would probably have to, yeah, phrasing. And you probably got to dump David Perron, too. Boy, it is. People are cracking up in the studio.
Sorry, I lost it there for
you
a second.
You have to find somebody
Matt Davis and I locked eyes across the table, and I could not control it.
You have to find somebody who's really into space chips. yeah, no, that's fair. How about absorb the contract, maybe
Thank
is
you.
Better phrasing.
All right.
Yeah, you'd have to figure out a way to do that for sure. But, man, if that was a deal you could close, you close a deal and you figure out the money later. Like.
But you got to figure out the money before.
No, because you can exceed in the offseason. You can exceed the cap in the argument.
Yeah, but then if you were to go that far over the cap, every general manager in the NHL then would basically laugh and fold his arms and say, okay, try to figure that one out.
I mean, right. You could look. There are pieces you could shake loose from the tree to get some money out of here, right? You're looking, you know, Perron, Laterra, Gunnarsson, there are ways you could do it. You'd be making sacrifices. You'd be talking about a commitment to a guy like Vince Dunn for 80 games. I mean, that's what you'd be counting on.
Yeah.
But I don't know that it wouldn't be worth it.
He's probably the most ready out of the defensive guys coming up, though, isn't he?
Yeah, no, I agree, for sure.
Him or Jordan Schmaltz.
So. Well, I think we've seen how much they value Jordan Schmaltz at this point.
Well, he...
To an extent.
He played a little bit in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's... Look, he's a guy who you'll see... Jordan Schmaltz is going to be a guy who you're going to see go up and down until he hits waiver eligibility, and then it's going to be like, okay, we have to make a move on this guy. And then he's going to get traded, or, you know... I don't see Jordan Schmaltz as a big part of the long-term plan, for sure.
My computer, for some reason, is turning off, so I don't have any other Blues.
Looks like a Windows update.
It says logging off. I don't know.
Yep. So
no more bad Blues Lounge.
No more bad Blues Lounge.
Unless I go back, I could flip over my phone here.
Yeah, I saw something on Twitter, on Twitter yesterday.
Yeah, what's that?
Discussing what about the Blues trading for the number 2 overall pick for that center prospect that I don't know the
name of. Because
that
happens all the time.
Nico Hischier.
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah, so the thing with that...
He says it with such conviction.
I know, man. What the...
He could be totally wrong and we wouldn't know.
I just heard it and I still couldn't say it again. Nico Hischier, for sure.
Nico Hischier.
Don't even question if it's right.
Well, so Hischier and Nolan Patrick are the two guys at the top of the draft. Patrick is probably going to be the number 1 overall pick, if for no other reason than the Canadian focus of NHL general managers means they're not going to take a Swiss guy number 1 overall. But... I do think that they're in that's like pretty good text. Thanks, Johnny Utah. There is, I think, some concern over whether or not there's enough certainty at that spot that you would be comfortable taking trading a guy like Schwartz, basically, which is what it would involve,
right,
for that pick, because it's an interesting position, because the Flyers picking 2nd overall after having jumped up so far in the draft lottery might be more likely than the average team would to turn that number two overall pick, because they are closer to being competitive than other teams are, right? Because that's a bubble playoff team who gets really fortunate in the lottery, and so now they find themselves with that pick, and so maybe they're more willing to use it as an asset. But I just don't think that there's enough guarantee at the top of the draft this year to sacrifice what you know you have with Jaden Schwartz.
I can't believe we've ignored this breaking news that's been out there. Can we hit the breaking news sound? Have you read that Emilio Estevez is fed up with his phone?
No.
People keep calling him to congratulate him on the play of the Anaheim Ducks.
Just steer into the curb.
The guy who played Gordon Bombay in the Mighty Ducks movies is getting calls from all over the place, all of his Hollywood friends, saying, hey, go Ducks, go. And he's like, hey, I'm tired of it.
While we're talking Ducks and people who made an appearance in the Mighty Ducks movies, did you see the video?
What video?
Was put out?
Oh, Paul Kariya?
Oh, Paul Kariya, yeah.
Well, what was he doing in the video? I didn't actually watch
it. So the Ducks have basically numbers 1 through 16 hung up around the top of... It's the pond. It's Arrowhead Pond in Anaheim. I know that it's the Honda Center. That's the pond. They have numbers 1 through 16 hung up around the pond, and they've been shooting a series of web videos where they take a bucket of orange paint and they go up with a roller and they mark through the number one at a time as they get through the 16 wins of the Stanley Cup. So as they got through number, because they're counting down from 16 and not up. So as they got through win number 9 after they won their second round series.
Paul Kariya wore 9.
Paul Kariya was number 9 when he played in Anaheim. And there was a younger kid who I believe he's involved in some charitable function with the Ducks. I'm not sure if he's sick or, but there's something with the kid where he's involved with the Ducks. And the video is of that kid, it's like hauling up the paint bucket and starting to paint. And then you see a figure come from behind him in the orange jersey, stand next to him and watch it. And you know, and then they cut to the side, and he's like, pretty good, kid, like in the whole Mean Joe Green sort of way. And then Kariya takes the roller and paints through the other side of the X. And it was just, it was cool because he has not been at all involved. You know, we talked about before how he did not even show up to Teemu Selanne's jersey retirement night because he's so removed from the NHL, because he's so bitter about his quality of life now, basically, after a career of not being protected from concussions. And it was cool to see him come back and be
involved. You're ignoring the bigger story that Emilio Estevez is fed up with people calling him to congratulate him about the Ducks.
And you know,
that's the bigger story.
What's funny is that, like, and like the kid who plays Adam Banks is like dying for his phone to ring, like, yeah, for anyone to call him about anything.
Who's calling Emilio Estevez for anything else? I mean,
well, I mean, Charlie for money.
And I'm, well, that could be. I'm going to slide my phone over. Can you?
Okay.
I never thought that Emilio Estevez looked like the family
resemblance. Oh, man, he looks like Martin Sheen a lot.
He does.
Man, holy smokes.
Just like in the last couple of years, apparently.
Yeah.
I remember when he made an appearance on Two and a Half Men some years ago, and he was, he was an older-looking guy, and it was like, wow.
He's starting to look like his dad.
I did not watch Two and a Half Men because I respect myself.
I didn't either. I just happened to cross it.
Okay, fair.
I think it might have been when I was like really young.
Wait.
With my dad.
Question.
Did you know the little kid?
Wait, okay. Question. Do you think Hockey Bob watched Two and a Half Men?
Oh, yeah. That's his favorite show.
No,
Big Bang Theory. Sort of thing.
You think, like, Tied for First, maybe?
Oh, yeah.
All right, the kid from Two and a Half Men,
like, turned into a fundamentalist who came out and was like, don't watch this show. There's fornication.
Yeah. I think he apologized for that.
Well, yeah, he did, because the producer said,
he didn't,
hey, we're going to still pay you a lot of money, so shut the hell up. And he had to come out and be like, sorry, please watch my show.
Right.
Yeah, weird.
Wasn't a good move.
Not a good move.
He recognized it. He moved on.
We talked about Elizabeth Moss, right? Being a Scientologist and then also being in The Handmaid's Tale at the same time, and how that's pretty weird.
I don't know who, like, that is.
So Elizabeth Moss was played Peggy Olson on Mad Men.
Oh, okay.
And before that was the president's daughter on The West Wing. And she is in The Handmaid's Tale. She's in that Hulu adaptation of that book. That book is about a dystopian society that develops after the spread of basically weird religious fervor, which creates bizarre rules. And so she plays like the heroine of this tale, basically, but at the same time is like allegedly, please don't sue me, like a big time practicing Scientologist, right? And has been her entire life. And when asked about her in an interview, is like, hey, so how do you square what the moral of this show is with your religion? And she's just like, not talking about that, next. It's like, okay.
That's fair.
Look, and she is not obligated to talk about her personal faith at all.
So this is my work. Leave me alone.
But I think there's a fair question. I mean, there is a fair comparison to be drawn between the alleged practices of that alleged group of alleged people who allegedly believe that
alleged.
Too much alleging going on.
And really, what am I worried about? Like, what do I have that the Scientologists can even come after?
I do want to dip one more time into the Blues Lounge here on my phone, since my computer is now doing a Windows update, 72% done. Tom from St. Louis, Tom S., says, I know we're all disappointed over how the season ended, but is there a franchise more screwed than the Washington Capitals? 6 unrestricted free agents, 6 restricted free agents, no first, second, or third round picks in the draft. Think about that for a second. Before Washington makes their first selection at 120, the 120th pick, the Blues will have taken 5 players. That's kind of crazy.
I mean, yeah, the Capitals.
And that illustrates how Evgeny Kuznetsov could be
available.
Yeah.
Right?
If you want to give up a bunch of stuff and sign him to a big contract. Hey, did the phone ring?
Yeah. I think he said it was Lexington.
Oh, he's going to come in to yell at you about Scotty Upshaw.
Oh, yeah, Scotty Upshaw.
Hey, good morning, Lexington. How's it going?
Nothing much. You know, I know you guys have been talking about the Blues getting number one center and all, but I just want to know, what do you guys think? I mean, like, let's be realistic here. Like, the odds of us probably getting anybody this offseason are probably pretty slim. But if you cannot dump Letera, do you put him back with Tarasenko? And I know he sucks with, you know, everybody and all this crap, blah, 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 blah. But, I mean, if you look at Vladdy's, like, best season now, still, like, goal-wise, it was with Letera.
Yeah.
And
The thing is,
I don't think that Vladdy needs to be set up like other, I guess, snipers do, or just like wingers. He scores one way, and it's literally just cutting to the middle and taking a wrist shot. It's like, he's not like Stamkos or like Kucherov or one of those guys that needs to get open and take a one-time or anything. It's like, it actually amazes me that he scores one way, and he does it 40 times a year, and he does that way better than anybody in the world. It's like, it's actually mind-boggling, because he's not a great skater by any means.
Yeah,
but
I agree with that, but I think that highlights the lack of necessity to put Letera on that line, right? Because you're right that Tarasenko doesn't require that setup, and so his chemistry then, if we're asserting that he has chemistry with Letera, doesn't seem to matter as much. And I think you get more out of Letera in that third line role. Like in the playoffs, honestly, Yoel Lettera was not that bad. He had a useful role to play on that third line and was at least somewhat effective in that limited ice time where he could be put in positions to succeed. And so
I talked about it when he played on the fourth line that one game. He actually looked pretty good because he had a really simple job. You know, just go chase the puck and see if you can create some chaos. He didn't have to worry about carrying the baggage of playing with Vladimir Tarasenko.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the thing, like, with him. It's like, I feel like you kind of, like, if you look at the Winter Classic game, I know it's one game, but, like, when he played with him, he would just, it's almost like when you, if you put the puck in the right spot for Vladdy, just kind of, like, dump it off to him, he'll create his own goals. Like, and that's it's kind of the sad thing is, like, I worry if we get a guy, and I'm not saying that Nick Backstrom wouldn't help this team, but it's like, I just feel like it's almost like force-feeding something. If you put Backstrom or Tarasenko and it doesn't work, then, you know, the sky will be falling for Blues fans, and they're going to wonder why is it not working. It's kind of weird. Like, I'm not saying he's, like, exactly, like, easy to play or, you know, like, because he's so good, but I feel like he's kind of hard to play with how he is. And, you know, I mean, you know how he is. He absolutely loves Lettera and stuff, and, like, I'm not, like, a Lettera fan by any means. It's unfortunate he makes as much as he makes. I wish he could score more. I just think you need something. Like, I think Tyler Johnson would be the best case scenario because, you know, he has speed and he can, you know, create some space for Vladdy. But I really don't know what's going to actually work with him and whatnot and what he'll be happy with. And I don't know.
Hey, thanks for the call, Lexington. Appreciate it. Go ahead, Matt.
I was going to say, my thoughts on that is if you like seeing Tarasenko draped by three defenders in the offensive zone all through the playoffs to where he's limited in point production and what he's able to do and create, then yeah, go ahead and throw him back on the line with Lettera or somebody of a similar skill set, and you will see the same thing happen every season.
The question is,
he needs somebody there that's going to take the heat off of him from the defense.
The question is whether his goal scoring ability to date has been descriptive or prescriptive, which is to say, is the reason that he creates his own goals because he does not have sufficient opportunity to be set in the offensive zone?
That's a good question. I don't know. Maybe we can dive into it tomorrow. That's a teaser. Come back in 22 hours.
Come back in 22 hours. And the old Crystal City Clamhammer was asking if this is Entertainment Tonight or Game Time. Look, it's the off season. You should expect a little bit of variety.
Hey, we spent like more than half an hour talking about the Cardinals. That's like a record for this radio show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. By the way, I'm not totally convinced that there's going to be a TMA this morning. Are they on remote by chance? They might be on remote.
They must
There's
be.
A good possibility.
Okay.
They
no
must be.
Because as I'm looking around, yeah, like,
no cat,
there's
no
cat, no Doug. Like, TMA this morning is going to, and no Sea Monster either. So it's going to be like Iggy and Plowsy.
Yeah, they must be on remote. So we'll find out here in a couple minutes. We need to get to three stars. Matt Davis, think of one. You get the second star.
Okay.
Jeff, who
I'd rather third star because mine's very not important.
The third star will be whoever that Blues Lounge guy was that wanted to acquire Evgeny Kuznetsov, because I agree with that guy.
All right, that was Tom S., I believe.
Yeah, way to go, Tom.
No, whoever.
Whoever it was. Way to go, Zick.
Thanks, Blues Lounge guy.
Right.
Hey, Matt Davis, you got a second star of the show?
Second star is going to be, I'm going to say, the son of Martin LaPointe.
Forgetting. Because he was...
He got Ubered by the best.
By the way, Martin LaPointe does not own property in St. Louis County. So
is it Martin? Martin?
Martin, he's French.
Okay,
Martin.
I thought so. I almost said it that way, but I wasn't sure.
Martin LaPointe.
LaPointe. I like that.
You're
good with names.
That's true.
I'm going to give first star to Jeff Jones for being such a good name guy.
Nailed it.
He's making up for my name deficiency.
That's really all I do here is just pronounce the names correctly.
But you do it so well.
That's true.
With confidence.
Yeah.
He sells it. He could be wrong. He's not going to let you know he's wrong.
Fake
he's not going to let on
it.
He's wrong.
Yeah. Fake it till you make it.
Absolutely. All right. Hey, that was a fun show. All right. We'll be back more. We'll see what we can dig up for tomorrow's Game Time AM. So the podcast is up, InsideSCL.com. Check us out tomorrow, 5 a.m. Good morning, St. Louis.